Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are. My name is Anthony, and I am definitely powerless. My Lord, show me what to do, tell me what you want me to do, and guide me to do it. That's been pretty much a synopsis of my step journey in this program so far. And I do want to apologize to anybody in North America who's, you know, maybe waking up and hearing my voice. It's probably not the easiest voice to listen to. My name might be Tony, but I'm definitely not, you know, Tony Robbins. I will refer to certain situations, including my family a little bit, growing up. I'm blessed to have literally completely let go of resentment toward my family. I thank God removed that in step seven. So whatever I say is just anecdotal, has nothing to do with a judgment. Criticism. Some people say people do the best they can do given their own circumstances. And other people say, well, that's not good enough. You know, to me, that's all irrelevant at this point. So I have a couple of little cheat notes because I've always been a bit of a scatterbrain. I was never a structured, organized person, you know. In fact, probably the exact opposite. I've always been unstructured and disorganized. I grew up in New York City, as you may be able to tell, in a pretty large flat, for those across the pond. And went to high school, college, everything in Manhattan. And my dad was a banker, and my mom was an accountant. And my dad had addictions. He was addicted to alcohol, gambling. My parents, you know, back in the 70s were making well into six figures, and we were always kind of broke. My dad didn't know how to invest money, even though he worked on Wall Street. and that's okay, you know, but I was always a little bit of a mediator in my family, a negotiator. My mom wanted to kick my dad out several times, and probably at around the age of 12 or so, I was the one who was, you know, trying to reconcile their marriage. Probably not the easiest task at that time, while trying to, you know, mature and get educated and all that stuff. So I did grow up Catholic. I did go to church. My parents did not go to church, but I did. And I only reference that because that's come back into my life in a little bit of a different way now. But I used to be really kind of very kind of, like I said before, scattered. You know, I was a scatterbrain. I was always the kid that had so much potential. You know, I played baseball. I did good in school up to about maybe fifth or sixth grade, and then I just couldn't get attention from the nuns, and you know, the other teachers of my school just didn't give me the attention that I was starving for, I think, at that point in my life. I kind of struggled through, got to high school, went to an all boys high school on the east side of Manhattan. My mom always tried to protect me from the bad elements, you know, but she didn't know I had a lot of bad elements inside of me. So protecting me from, you know, other kids that were malevolent or mischievous, or I didn't even care about that stuff. I was just really looking to escape, you know. That's how I felt, like I was just always trying to run away. So in high school, I went to an all boys high school, and that was not easy. I would sometimes just think to myself, why the F did my mom put me in this school, you know? And my high school experience was not great. I barely got out of school. Had several confrontations with my Franciscan brothers at the school, and got into some fights and stuff. I was, you know, again, no structure, no plan. Just kind of going through the motions, figuring, okay, I'll get to college and then I'll figure it all out in college, you know? So somehow I did get into college. I don't even really know how I did, but in between that time, I had found a white powder drug that, you know, could make me kind of feel in some way how it just give me the escape that I needed. So I quickly got addicted to cocaine at that time. And I snorted cocaine probably about 4 or 5 times a week, minimally. That went on for about 8 or 9 years. I got out of college somehow, went to work on Wall Street, and continued to snort more cocaine, even as a trader. So I found AA at Trinity Place, Trinity Church, if anyone's ever been down in the Wall Street area. It's a beautiful church down there. I'm in Florida now, so up there. And we used to have some incredible AA meetings back then, you know, 200, 250 people for a lunchtime meeting. And it was quite an amazing fellowship. And I bought right into it. I had gone to a drug rehab, but I went to a drug rehab for 30 days and out on Long Island. And, you know, again, my mom was convinced that, you know, she was going to find a way to cure her son. My dad was still kind of just in the distance, you know. He was just kind of lost in his disease. There's no other way to put it. Again, no judgment. It's just he was lost. Went to work every day, made great money, but somehow maintained his job with a brokerage firm for 45 years. I don't know how he did it. And, you know, to his defense, he had a dad, my grandfather, who I never met. He actually passed before I was born. His dad used to beat the living heck out of his mother in front of him when he was a kid. So he did not, you know, sometimes we want to judge people and say, oh, my parents did this and that. Or at least I would want to say that. But we have sometimes no clue what our parents went through growing up. Because I know if my parents never really talked about their childhood. So anyway, I finally got to program, and I gave up cocaine through the 12 steps, going to AA meetings, NA. That was 30 years ago now, almost 30 years ago, that I have not snorted cocaine. But I did learn a lot about fellowship, got involved. I had two sponsors. I was probably sponsoring, I don't know, 5 or 6 people at that time. One of my sponsors always used to sit in the back of the room, and I think it's kind of relevant. He was an older gentleman. He got his bachelor's degree in his 80s. I was always kind of proud of him for that. And he always sat in the back of the room, and people would say, "Hey, Frank, you know, why do you sit in the back?" And he'd say, "Well, I've been in this meeting for 35 years, and I'm still waiting for someone to come in the back door and say it actually got better out there, and I'll be the first one out. But I've been sitting here for 35 years, and nobody's ever come back in and said that it's gotten better out there." And I guess the same could apply to any meetings. You know, whenever I hear about somebody going out, I pray for them. You know, I do. Because I know it's a tough road, you know. So let me get a little bit expeditious here and move forward. I ended up getting married, having 2 amazing children. I was still, I still had a lot of flaws, you know, a lot of character defects going on, even without the coke. And so starting to recognize that I just wasn't, you know, well equipped to deal with life spiritually or in any other way. So I had a lot of, at that time, I had a lot of like sorrow and regret and remorse. I had to leave NYU's business school because of cocaine when I was active. And I just had a lot of regret, sorrow, you know. And I think this disease manifests itself a lot in those characteristics, constantly feeling sorrowful about myself, you know, trying to live half my life in the present and half in the past, and just having a lot of regret and remorse, and why did that happen? And I thought I was going to be able to accomplish this, and why did my parents do that? And, you know, just questioning life and why I was on this road, you know. What did I ever do, you know, to deserve this kind of fate? And I used to be really angry about that. So it's really kind of, I'll just go to a little bit now where I've transitioned to. And it did take me some time. I would say back in about 2003, 2004, about 15, 17 years ago, maybe, I found food. I knew that I couldn't snort coke. I just couldn't go back to that. My kids never saw me high. And I just couldn't go back into that kind of lifestyle. All the illegality about it, trying to get it, trying to find it. Expensive as hell, and just trying to stay high constantly, you know. So I found food, which I didn't realize it at, you know, when I was younger, but food was actually a really good outlet for me because it numbed me out. I didn't have to feel anything. It was socially acceptable. Sure, I would get obese, but so is every, you know, 50% of the population is obese. And I don't have to worry about, you know, are there police officers around, you know, while I'm getting high in my car, or Are they going to invade my house? I used to hang out with some pretty sketchy people when I was in the Coke. So, but anyway, so I found food, and I had gone into a different career. I was traveling a little bit for a big computer company, and I was doing a lot of overnight stays. You know, a week here, 4 days here, 2 days here in a hotel, all throughout Florida. And that was like the perfect job to become a compulsive, to really, you know, go into becoming a compulsive overeater, because I would get done with work. I would go see clients. I would go back to the hotel, and there wasn't any place to cook. I wasn't going to sit there and start, you know, cooking. There was no DoorDash, you know, at that time. You basically just went to the drive-through, got a bunch of food, or called room service, got a bunch of food, and sat there and watched TV until the next morning. And that's what I did for several years, and gained a lot of weight, really gained a lot of weight. At one point around 2007, I think I had gotten up to about 300 pounds, which was my peak weight. And just comparatively speaking, I'm 175 pounds now. So I've released over 125 pounds over the last few years. But the food was a comfort. The food was, you know, the binging was a comfort. I could just kind of binge out, not have to think about anything, not have to feel about anything, and just keep going. So I was good at restricting. That's how I kept weight off. I would binge out, and then I would, you know, try to starve myself for days. And that's literally what I did. I would, you know, have these massive binge days, and then I would go for 3 or 4 days just kind of eating calories, low calories, you know, celery, carrots, things that I hated. And I started rollerblading. I used to play hockey a little bit when I was a kid. I started rollerblading about 10 miles a day. And I lost a lot of weight. I really did. And it got to about 2019, and I lost both my parents in 2019 within a few years of each other. And I went up to Canada there a little after that, and was binging the whole time up in Toronto, and then got back from there. Stayed here in Florida for a few weeks or so, and then I went out to California. And that trip to California, I guess it was about 10 days. I was in Northern California, and I was just eating constantly through the whole trip, binging, you know, and had no idea where it came from again. It just started coming back into my life. And the weight was piling on. And as soon as I got to 200 pounds again, and mind you, I was 300, but as soon as I got to 200, like, these big red flashing lights started, you know, blinking. And I guess it was July I got back, and I binged for a couple more weeks. And then on August 20th, I came into my first Footsteps meeting. And I was abstinent that day, and it's been 145 consecutive continuous days from there. And I've lost about 20 pounds. Not that that's important, but, you know, it's just part of being abstinent. You know, you lose weight. So it's a good thing. So a couple of really cool things have happened. I got introduced to some of the people in these meetings. Some of you I've seen so many times, and you do, you know, incredible service. Claire, Ruth, Janet, you know, Dan has always been here. And when I continue to see people showing up, it kind of inspires me, you know, to keep showing up. And I no longer regret the past. I've gone through the steps again. You know, first admitting my powerlessness, getting to step two and three, and having a little bit of a different understanding of my higher power today, and realizing, can I just get a check on time?
Gentle reminder.
Okay.
You're there.
Okay. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I didn't think I was really going to have that much to say. I'm just trying to become the best version of myself. I don't put a lot of big expectations on myself anymore, because I did that my whole life. And I never really became what I thought I could or would or any of that. All that potential stuff doesn't really mean anything. I'm just trying to be the best version of myself today. And I realized that as each day goes by, I'm half who I am that day, and I'm half of who I am going to become. So very rarely am I looking back anymore. I don't regret the past, kind of like what it says in the big book, you know. We no longer regret the past, and you know, we no longer wish to shut the door on it. It is what it is. It was what it was, and I don't have to live in it anymore. My higher power is for me, and I'll just say this, my higher power is Jesus Christ. And I had to identify my higher power and really kind of try to understand my higher power and the level of compassion that my higher power has. Because I think for a long time, I always looked at my higher power as this authoritative, sacrificial thing, you know, and didn't really understand the other side of it for me, which is the amazing compassion that my higher power has for me, and how my higher power lived and was able to live because of the love that he gave for me, you know. And I try to remember that. And every time I go through a challenge, nothing is that, you know, crazy today, not like it used to be. But whenever I go through a challenge, I always have to remember that my higher power is right there next to the challenge all the time. And I have a choice to make. Do I want to go into get absorbed by the challenge? Because that's where my higher power goes. That's how I look at it. Like my higher power goes where he always did. He always went to where the craziness was. He always went to the crazy situations. So why wouldn't he do that in my life today? He goes to the crazy situations. So I don't have to. And he'll be like, hey, do you want to, you know, go down that path? Because that's where most of the people are going. So go ahead.
Gentle reminder.
I'm going to close it up. So I'm thank God for these steps, really. Especially, I could say especially a few of them, but step three, you know, not having expectations anymore and just giving it to my higher power. Step seven, having stuff like sorrow, regret, guilt removed has changed my spirit. It's changed my life. And then continuing to try to improve my conscious contact with God on a day-to-day basis. That has become the primary objective in my life today. It's not anything else but trying to improve that, because I know it's better than it used to be, but it's definitely not as good as it could be. And I recognize that in myself, that I can have an even better connection The love is there, and my higher power wants to love me, wants to be there for me. And it's just sometimes my own little stubbornness that gets in the way. So I'm going to close it there. I'm sorry if I was a little disjointed. It is 5 in the morning here. So I did the best that I could, and I'm glad you're all here today. Thank you so much, and bless you all.